We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave, this Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. Excited to welcome program Caregiver Dave Nassani. Dave, how are you? And you know what?
Great.
It's you're just rolling, right? Getting ready, everyone to go to Acapulco, right? And Mexico.
I'm leaving tomorrow. No, I'm leaving Sunday, and here it's raining in southern sunny California. It's pouring rain, so I'll be looking forward to laying on the beach in Acapulco.
All right, my guest today is author Derek O'Hanley, author of Photos from the Frontlines, A Year of the Streets in Alameda, California County. How are you, Derek? And thanks for stopping by, man.
Happy to be here, Neil. Thank you so much for having me.
So just talk about the specifics, of being a photographer. Was that always something you wanted to do, growing up and stuff, photography?
It was something I did kind of on an amateur level. My mom was an inspiration. My uncle, who, great uncle, I'm sorry, who lived next door, he was actually a photographer in the World War II Pacific Theater. He was part of the Marine Corps Aerial Reconnaissance Unit. And so between the two of them, I feel like I got some inspiration as a kid. And then getting older, I worked as a paramedic, and we see some crazy stuff out there on the streets. And so I got back when cameras were just getting small enough to stick in your pocket before they were on phones. I got one and I brought it in the field and got some interesting stuff. And this project kind of was born out of something like that, where it's interesting to see the car accidents and the kind of more spectacular things that you see in the field, but this is more focused on the providers and trying to really humanize the folks who are in this profession, because I think that the career of a paramedic is kind of esoteric for people. They're out there, they see the ambulances driving around, they call 911, they show up. But what they actually do, the nuts and bolts and the trauma that these folks are exposed to, I think is often going unnoticed.
Are you in Alameda County of California?
Correct. I recently moved up to the Portland area a few months ago, but that's where I was for the last 10 years or so.
That's Northern California, right? Alameda.
Yeah, Bay Area, East Bay from San Francisco.
What's it like there? Crime, just normal part of California, or what?
Alameda County is an interesting area. It's home to Oakland, so obviously a giant urban center, and all of the things that come along with that. There's
Affluent
also
area. It's affluent.
the Oakland Hills, so lots of money up in the hills. There's also going south in the county, gets a lot more rural. So there's Dublin, Pleasanton, Livermore, things like that. So to be a paramedic in Alameda County is an interesting thing, because you can go from being out in the country dealing with a car accident to being in Oakland and dealing with a shooting the next call. So it's a very varied place to work. I think that helped with getting some of the interesting shots that we did out there in the field.
What did you learn from seeing the what was happening on the front lines with, putting this whole book together?
Yeah, I think that was kind of the genesis of the whole project, Neil. But I knew that these stories were happening out there, and I knew that they would go unnoticed if they weren't documented. Amazing things that these paramedics were doing. I mean, guys, you got to understand, this job is so difficult mentally, physically, on the folks that do it ordinarily. I mean, just talking about the traumatic exposures of a medic working in Oakland for 6 months, and that's more than the average soldier sees in their lifetime. And so to have that, and then on top of that, now we have this global pandemic descending upon the world. And medics don't have the option to work from home. They have to go in, they have to, and every call they show up to could potentially be a COVID case. It's an invisible enemy. They don't know. And so to have this pressure on top of the ordinary levels of traumatic exposures that these folks were facing was unbelievable. I mean, there's one thing that I saw out there was, it still almost brings me to tears today, was the it's a small segment in the book, but it talks about paramedics who were volunteering to go into nursing homes. 'Cause I'm sure you remember in the beginning of the pandemic, nursing homes were just being burned through with the virus. And it got to the point where everyone on the staff had to be homesick because they all caught it. And so the county asked if paramedics would be willing to volunteer to go into these nursing homes where everyone's been wiped out in order to take care of these patients. And I'll be dipped if folks voluntarily, who've been on the front lines for months already, volunteer to walk into these nursing homes and take care of these folks. And man, if you have a better example of service before self and self-sacrifice, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a caregiver, and it's near and dear to my heart. Do you actually have a lot of photos in the nursing homes?
I only got a few just because it's kind of tricky to, because I don't want to expose patient privacy and things like that. So most of my shots were focused on the providers. And again, this whole project, you know, essentially could have easily not happened. I could have just stayed home throughout this entire thing. But, you know, it's also a great risk to myself and, yeah, you know, unique to this battlefront, if you will, because I use military vernacular in the book quite a bit to try and tie those two conceptions in people's minds together of military and medic, because again, the level of traumatic exposures that paramedics see is only comparable to that of someone who's been in combat or, you know, a soldier or something like that.
The PTSD, Derek, the challenges before COVID. Thank you for your service in this area, because you guys are underpaid. You're the ones that are always there when it's the biggest emergencies possible, the biggest traumas, compared to being in the military. And people in the military not dealing with trauma, like you're guaranteed if you become a paramedic, you're going to have trauma every day, right? I mean, there's going to be a traumatic call or different thing, less than a police officer or anything. And people don't see that. They don't really value you guys as first responders, or we don't value enough to just put you on a pedestal by themselves.
Totally. I agree 100%. And that's a saying I heard recently from someone I was talking with was, you know, the military protects us overseas, first responders protect us at home. And I think we need to start thinking about our first responders like we do our military, because like you're saying, Neil, you know, I served with folks when I was in the military who spent their 4 years working in the logistics office, which is extremely important, and they should be thanked for their service 100%. But let's compare the traumatic exposures of the logistics clerk to, like I said, any medic who's been on the streets of Oakland or any other major city for more than a few months, and there is no comparison. So that's why I have started kind of a campaign for, you know, hashtag thank medics for their service, because I think as society, we need to, I mean, that's the basic level, but like, what else can we do to take care of these folks? Like, you know, you see, that's kind of my thing too, is like, you know, no one cares about World War I, right? Because there's no photos, there's no videos. Once I started pushing photographers and video folks to the front lines in World War II, they started showing the civilians these images. They're like, this is what these folks have to deal with. Like, this is what they're seeing. Like, wow, we should thank these folks. We should, you know, take care of their healthcare and their education and, you know, make sure that these folks are exalted in society. And so that's kind of the mission behind what the book is kind of hearkening back to those days of black and white World War II battleground photography to hopefully, you know, trigger an emotional response in folks. And, you know, if you see something, then you're more likely to understand it and want to take care of it.
Right. Yeah, did you know any first responders who actually died of COVID, and how many times did you contract it?
I only contracted it once. I know there were quite a few medics who got pretty bad cases of it, actually, especially with the first strains that were coming around before the vaccines and all this stuff. But fortunately, I don't know of any medics, at least in Alameda County, that I'm aware of who perished from it. But definitely, it wiped out quite a few, especially in the early days.
A lot of them are younger.
Yes, it is a rather younger
population
workforce. Yeah. Because it's really hard to, I don't know how anyone stays in this career field for 10, 20, 30 years. I mean, people do it. It's astounding to me. It makes my jaw drop when I see these folks, and their level of resilience that these folks must have to be able to do it is just astronomical. But that being said, one of the things that really struck me about being out there in the field was, you know, there's all the accidents and this and that, and you expect a medic in Oakland to be kind of grizzled and have that kind of emotional armor and, you know, things like that. And they do, and they can come across kind of gruff, you know, especially if they don't know you. But the thing that really struck me was that despite all they see and despite the gruffness, the compassion is still there. Yeah. You know, when the chips are down, when someone needs another human being to just connect with and be there for them, they're still, that heart is still there and the compassion is still there. And to me, that was one of the, not something that is a spectacular thing you can capture in an image, but something that really struck me being out there with these folks again.
Oh, wow. You know, I wanted to, one more thing, Derek. So are you still practicing as a paramedic?
I'm still certified, but I'm not in the game anymore. I have.
How long since you've been out?
I still teach. I teach EMTs. So I've been an educator for probably the last 10 years or so. But I mentally, I can't do the game anymore. I mean, it's so difficult. I might be better off now because I'm actually doing things like therapy and that type of stuff to process a lot of these things. But that wasn't, therapy and post-traumatic stress, things like that were not mentioned when I was in paramedic school. I can tell you that much. So I'm kind of playing catch up. on my mental health. And I'm hopefully, you know, exposure to things like this and these shows will help, you know, inspire medics and those to, you know, take care of them and take care of themselves, because this is such a hard thing, such a hard thing to deal with.
Every medic needs to buy your book, and that's for sure. I'll be sharing it in groups and stuff, this interview, because to medic groups, because in getting that name out there to every list, to every medic in the all the United States and maybe all the world, they need to have this book just to kind of say thank you for highlighting them. Now, Dave has a question regarding caregiving. Go ahead, Dave. He's an amazing story, just like yours, Derek.
Yeah, so 25, 26 years ago, I became a caregiver when my wife suffered a stroke. She lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side, and we almost broke up, you know, the grief process, but we hung in there. I went to a support group, and she started becoming her old self again. Our love was rekindled, and so I realized there are other caregivers out there who are suffering and going through what I did, and I made a lot of mistakes. So I became Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. I now host a syndicated radio show. I've spoken on 60 TV programs, morning network shows all across the country. I started caregiverdave.com. It's an online support group. And my question to you, Derek, is, you know, caregivers, 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do. And I wasn't prepared. I truly believe that everyone is either going to become a caregiver or need a caregiver. Has caregiver touched your life?
I would say, you know, probably one of the best examples I can give from my own personal life would be when my own grandfather was on his deathbed. And I didn't even really, you know, we come from a kind of an old Irish Catholic family where, you know, illnesses and things aren't really spoken about and, you know, suffer in silence and, you know, those kind of maxims that you hear from the old school kind of East Coast families. And so I didn't really know he had cancer until he was on his deathbed. And so it was all kind of a shock, like, whoa, what's going on? Like, I didn't even know he was sick. And then all of a sudden he's to the point where he can't even speak. And then, you know, can't take care of himself, can't eat. We had to do all the, you know, the toilet issues, you know, all the things that come, you know, you're well aware from being a caregiver of all this stuff. And so that was hard for me, especially at the end, you know, when he kind of took his last breath, because, you know, it was everything inside me as a paramedic was screaming to do something to save his life and to keep him breathing and this and that, but he had a DNR and it was his wish to go peacefully. And so, to me, taking care of him wasn't a hard part. I was honored to be able to be there, for him in his last, days. But to me, that was the hard part, was just letting him go, and having to resist all my training and all that stuff from all over the years.
Yeah, we moved into caregiver wellness retreats now for caregivers because, you know, they don't get enough breaks and they give and give and give until there's nothing left to give. So now we take them over to Acapulco and we give them 7 days, seven nights, along with a coaching program, mastermind, just to help them stay alive, you know.
It's a tough thing. It's a tough thing to deal with. And there's secondary traumatic stress, too, that comes from being a caregiver. Compassion fatigue is also called as well. And, you know, just witnessing this stuff, just being involved in it is enough to affect the caregiver and have a huge impact. And so you're exactly right. You need to be a lot of times with mental health, we're reactive. Yeah. We need to be proactive. And it sounds like the program that you have going on is something proactive you can do for these folks to mitigate the effects of the stress and the compassion fatigue that is inevitable when taking care of someone long-term.
Well, it's still not easy for them to take care of themselves because, you know, it's like pulling teeth to get them to do what they need to do.
Yeah, sometimes we're our own worst patients.
So, Derek, where is the best place people can find information on you? Is your book available now or where people can get it?
It was just published yesterday, so it's available right now at dohp.net, dohp.net/books. You can check that book, my other book, and we have another project that hopefully will be coming up soon where I'm collecting some of the war stories of the medics who are out there on the streets and getting some of that down documented.
All right. Well, congrats on that. Congrats on continued success. And let's get that word out about medics, because they definitely need to be not – we always talk first responders. We got to talk medic too, just by itself. So appreciate it.
Thank you so much, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, you're welcome. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.